Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staber. The University of Michigan football team has been embroiled in a sign-stealing scandal for weeks. Head coach Jim Harbaugh is serving a 3-game suspension and won't be on the sidelines for their biggest regular season game of the year. Both Ohio State and the Wolverines are undefeated, and Ohio State is hoping to prevail after 2 straight losses to its arch rival. The winner will head to the Big Ten championship game against Iowa and likely to the college football playoff. Yet Michigan remains in the crosshairs of an NCAA investigation. Here with me to walk through all the twists and turns of this increasingly strange scandal is Angelique Shengelis, University of Michigan beat writer for the Detroit News. Welcome, Angelique.
Thank you, Anna. It's a pleasure to be here.
And Bill Rabinowitz, who covers Ohio State football for the Columbus Dispatch. Welcome, Bill.
Hi, Anna, and hi, Angelique.
Oh, hi, Bill. I didn't know Bill was going to be here, Anna. Thanks a lot.
I'm so sorry about that.
The rivalry extends beyond the football field, apparently.
Well, Angelique, let's start at the beginning. So the NCAA informed Michigan on October 18th that it was investigating whether the team scouted opponents in person in an effort to steal signs. So the NCAA doesn't prohibit sign stealing, but it does prohibit certain ways of doing it. Is that right?
That's correct. I mean, you can have sign stealing during a game, and a lot of teams have someone who's sort of designated at that as that person. But the allegations are certainly way more significant here. I mean, this is a network of sending individuals. Still not sure who exactly, if they were interns on the staff, friends of the individual who has since resigned. He was suspended with pay, Connor Stallions, who I think everyone has described as a low-level staffer. He was an analyst. And it seems like from some of the reporting that this is a pretty extensive network that he had, and multiple games, like over about 36 games that sending people to videotape upcoming Michigan opponents to get an advantage that way.
Bill, so the reporting came out like a week or so later on October 23rd that this Connor Stallions had bought tickets for more than 30 games at 11 Big Ten schools over the past 3 years. Is that sort of the gist of what?
Yeah, that's, you know, this was not just a one-off. This was a pattern, a system that they apparently had. And the fact that Michigan has accepted this penalty essentially means that they have, you know, I don't know if they've admitted guilt, but they've kind of pleaded no contest, I guess. And so, yeah, and so it kind of calls into question, I don't want to say legitimacy. I mean, I guess it does, because if you know the other team's plays, it's a huge advantage.
Yeah, and Angelique, so Harbaugh initially released a statement on October 19th claiming he didn't have, quote, any knowledge or information regarding the University of Michigan football program illegally stealing signs. But then a couple of weeks later, he just accepted the Big Ten's suspension. So I want to be clear, there's an NCAA investigation that is ongoing, correct? And then there's the Big Ten, which has sort of concluded its investigation and issued this penalty.
That's correct. And the NCAA investigation, I think we all know those tend to take a long time. But this was Big Ten Commissioner Tony Petitti using the sportsmanship policy. And to be clear, I'm not sure that I don't think Jim Harbaugh accepted it. I think this is something where, I mean, he was ready to go to court last Friday for a hearing to try to obtain a preliminary injunction to block the suspension. And from our understanding, from our reporting, there was information that was provided to the Big Ten probably late Wednesday night about another coach on the staff, Chris Partridge, the linebackers coach, who was fired last Friday. And that ultimately, the lawyers representing Michigan said, okay, we're not going to go to court. I don't think Jim Harbaugh wanted to go with that, but I think that there is definitely some arm twisting in that situation. And so far there has been no reporting saying that Jim Harbaugh knew about this. And again, I mean, this investigation is going to be going on for a while, and who knows what the dots will be connected. But as of this moment, he has not been directly connected to knowing about this scheme.
So, Bill, you had a former Buckeye coach, Urban Meyer, on your podcast this week. I actually listened to it on my drive in this morning, and you asked him whether he thought it was possible for a head coach not to know this was going on.
Yeah, and he didn't want to answer that one. He answered every other question that I asked him with a lot of candor. And I hope people do check out that podcast. But that one was like, but I said, what would happen if you found out that a staffer essentially was a Connor Stallions? He said something to the effect of, my head would pop off my shoulders.
Yeah, and he seemed to, by the way, it's the Buckeye Extra with an X podcast. So if you're searching for it in Apple iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, well worth a listen. But Urban also said that he read something different into Harbaugh deciding not to fight this 3-game suspension.
Yeah, for a long time, Urban Meyer told me that he didn't really believe the allegations. He thought, yeah, it just can't be true, that it just wouldn't happen. But when Michigan accepted the penalty, he thought, well, they must have. They must have known. They must have essentially. That's why I said what I said earlier, is that you don't, you know, take a guilty plea and certain effects. This obviously is not a court of law, but the equivalent, if you're not accepting of the fact that you've did something wrong. And so that was his take on it.
Yeah, Angelique, I want to talk a little bit about this Michigan off-field analyst, Connor Stallions. He's at the center of this scandal. He's the guy who allegedly bought these tickets and allegedly even stood on the sidelines during one game to watch a potential opponent play. What can you tell us about Connor?
Well, he allegedly stood on that sideline at the Central Michigan-Michigan State game in disguise, as everybody has seen the photos. You know, I didn't really have any interactions with Connor. I mean, a young guy, he was local from Lake Orion High School, went to the Naval Academy, diehard, absolutely diehard Michigan fans. You've heard other Michigan players like Devin Gardner was on the radio saying he remembers, you know, getting off the team buses, even on road games, and Connor, this young boy, Connor Stallions, would be there. Has always loved Michigan football. His parents went to Michigan. And I think people now are describing him as someone who's just overzealous. And I think if you read some of the reporting about a 600-page manifesto, I think that certainly backs that up. But, you know, I think people I've talked to also said he's a very nice guy. I mean, like not a malicious person. And but I, you know, I think that there is a sense among this Michigan football community that he was acting alone. This is a lone wolf thing. And I think, you know, when there's the firing of a position coach last week, I think that suggests that they are looking, the NCAA and is looking at who knew, and you know, here's someone who worked closely with Connor Stallions. So I don't think, you know, I think that there's still more news to drop coming out of this. That's not the end of it with Chris Partridge's firing.
So Angelique, I will freely admit that you've probably forgotten more about college football than I will ever know. But what I find sort of squirrely about all this is Stallions worked in the recruiting department, yet he posted these images of himself standing next to Michigan defensive coordinators on the sidelines during games. How did he get down on the field?
Well, that's a really great question. And you know, I do think that I've got his personnel file, and he was not assigned to the recruiting department according to his contract with Michigan, but he was placed, you know, on the staff lineup, I guess you'd call it. That's where he was. But, you know, I had taken a screenshot. I assumed he was going to delete his Twitter account the next day after all of this was breaking. And he listed himself as UMich football linebackers. So he was very much a part of the linebackers room, which is where Chris Partridge was the position coach. And he was known in the building as the sign stealer and a guy who's proficient at it. And now we probably know more reasons why. And, you know, I think when you're identified that way, then that gives you a little bit more cachet, and you are on the field. You are the guy who's standing there saying, hey, I'm picking up the signal. This is what's happening. So I know that he's been listed as a recruiting analyst, but my understanding is, you know, he was working with the linebackers.
Bill, I want to ask about last year's game against Michigan. So footage of that match has kind of gone viral, at least on Twitter. There's this clip that shows Stallions standing next to the Wolverines defensive coordinator, Jesse Minter, and he appears to be looking really intently at the opposite sideline. And then as soon as it seems like we get the signal, he begins signaling.
Yes, that's suspicious. You know, Ohio State fans now, after Ohio State got beat pretty badly the last 2 years are looking at that and going, well, you know, sure, they crushed Ohio State because they knew what was coming. They knew the plays. Now, is that true? I don't know. It doesn't absolve Ohio State of the fact they only scored 3 points after halftime, or they gave up even more, more so on defense. They gave up 5 huge plays that cost them last year in a bad loss. It's one thing, you know, if you know the offensive plays, you still got to make the tackle on defense. It's more of an offensive side of the ball thing for Ohio State. So it's only a partial explanation or excuse, but it does call into question the legitimacy of those wins. It just does.
So do you think the NCAA could reevaluate Michigan's last couple of seasons? I guess that's a question for both of you.
Well, nobody ever knows what the NCAA will do. I mean, there was a huge basketball scandal involving major programs like Kansas, and they got off with a slap on the wrist when the evidence seemed to be pretty strong. So, and then there are other times the NCAA will come down really hard on people. I mean, Angelique, do you agree that it's really hard to predict how the NCAA will ultimately rule?
Well, it will. And I mean, the other thing to consider, Anna, is there's another NCAA investigation that's unresolved at Michigan involving impermissible recruiting visits in 2021 under the COVID. It was a COVID dead period for recruiting. So that has not been resolved. And, talk to several lawyers, NCAA, who represent universities in NCAA matters. And, you know, they wondered if the NCAA will combine both or make it, you know, keep them separate. And then you're looking at a repeat offender kind of situation. I received something this morning talking about the NCAA bylaws allowing the NCAA to vacate wins and awards pretty much only when there's an ineligible player participating. But the last line is other penalties as appropriate. So, you know, I think it's unclear, but when you look at the penalty matrix going into next season, yes, Jim Harbaugh has been suspended for half a season, 3 games early in the year, self-imposed, for the previous investigation, and now these 3 games from the Big Ten. I'm not sure the NCAA is going to look at those and say, oh, okay, you've penalized, so we're just going to, we'll kind of make this cushier. I don't think that's how it's going to be. And I think right now you're looking at the potential for at least a 6-game suspension for Harbaugh next year. But I mean, it could be significantly worse. It just depending on how the NCAA is looking at these 2 NCAA investigations and how they will handle both of them at this time.
So then the big question is this the end of Jim Harbaugh's career? I'll let Bill go first, or either of you go first.
Angelique would know far better than I would. She covers Michigan, but I would not be surprised. I mean, he's certainly flirted with the NFL in the last 2 years, and he's had success at the NFL level. The question is, would an NFL team hire him right now? I don't know that, but I'll defer the rest of it to Angelique.
Well, I mean, I think, Anna, I said going into this season, I did not think he'd be here in 2024. And just because he's going to be 60 next month, I think he's always had NFL aspirations to get back. I mean, obviously he was there with the 49ers, and he's proven that by interviewing with the Vikings and then earlier this year having very, very extensive conversations with the Broncos. So I've always thought that. And now I think that this likely accelerates that. Does he want to deal with whatever is going to come from the NCAA? And I think there's also all the other issues like dealing with NIL, the transfer portal, that's affecting a lot of college coaches and their decisions about whether you stay in this game or you go to the NFL. And Bill's right. I mean, it depends on whether an NFL team wants him. Now, the Vikings and the Broncos have expressed interest in these last 2 years. And I suspect there's going to be at least one team in this next cycle that will look at Jim Harbaugh. He's proven to be a very good coach. And it's just, you know, are you willing to deal with all of this other issue that's following him?
Well, actually, that's a good segue into the next question I wanted to ask you guys. Later in our show, we're going to talk to a guest who has created wearable technology that the pros use for plays. They don't have those brightly colored folks on their sidelines sort of signaling. So why has the collegiate level been so resistant to this kind of technology?
I don't know the answer to that. I just think that it's just been a rule that they couldn't. I think they're going to revisit that. I think this scandal, this is a pretty easy solution to that, right? I mean, if you don't have to give signals, you can't steal the signals. So, that, But I think that will be a result of this scandal.
I think so too, and I think a lot of it is cost. I mean, this is not cheap technology, and you know, you're looking at the upper echelon teams here, Michigan, Ohio State, and the rest of the top 25. But then you know, what about these smaller teams? What about some of the other teams that don't have boatloads of money coming into their program, like these two programs do? So I think it's been partly cost, but it absolutely is something that has to be the next move in college football. And I really thought it would be something that Tony Petitti might come out and say, you know, in light of this, he wants the Big Ten to be on the forefront of this. And maybe that's still the case.
No, that's interesting. I hadn't considered that since I have decided to align myself with Ohio State, but I'm actually a Kent State grad. So they're Division I, but not Division I is probably the best way to put that. but yeah, a place like that might struggle more financially to raise the money to not only convert the helmets, but to improve the Wi-Fi within their own stadium enough to where they can actually use this in real time.
And obviously there are always problems with technology. It's not always foolproof. So I think that's an issue too.
Yeah. So we're coming to the end of our time together, but I can't let either of you go without giving you your prediction for Saturday.
Oh, man. I haven't even done it for the Dispatch yet. So.
Oh, so you're going to hear it here first.
Well, I'll let Angelique go first.
Well, I haven't done mine either yet, Anna.
And Angelique, you have to do one for us.
I waffle like every minute. I really have had more of a lean toward Ohio State winning this game, but you know, talking to Michigan players last night after practice, there's definitely a sense of their motivation is if you don't win this game, the rest of the season doesn't matter. That's not a new approach, but it's something that's very much motivating. And you know, through this scandal, through this off-field noise, I have to say this team has been one of the most mature I've covered at Michigan. I've been doing this a long time, and they've really dealt with a lot this season. Not of their doing, and they really handled it well. So I don't mean to be waffling. I just have not come up with a prediction yet, Anna.
Well, you better do it by noon. We need it, actually. I would say that until 2 weeks ago, I thought Michigan was clearly the better team, and I was going to pick Michigan. I think this version of the scandal, the fact that Harbaugh's not going to be on the sideline, the fact that Ohio State is playing better, their offensive line is playing better, they're healthier now, Travion Henderson's back, Emeka Buka's back, and Ohio State has just as much motivation as Michigan. They're not going to lose that motivation battle because they've lost the last two. And for the Marvin Harrisons and players like that who've never gotten the gold pants for beating Michigan, they are highly, highly motivated. So I'm actually surprising myself by thinking that I'm leaning toward Ohio State at this point, because I wouldn't have said that for most of the year.
And I guess I'll give my own prediction too. Maybe I'm a little biased. I do give an edge, but I do think it could go either way. And I don't think we're going to have a clear answer until the end of the fourth.
Going out on a limb there.
No, I think like Ohio State has an amazing defense. I think the quarterback at Michigan might be a little better, but how that plays out, who wins, it is really hard. It was a hard question.
Yeah.
Well, that was Detroit News football beat writer Angelique Shingalis and Columbus Dispatch football writer Bill Rowinitz. Thank you both so much.
Thank you, Anna.
Coming up.
Happy Thanksgiving, Anna.
Oh, you too. Coming up, we're going to hear from former Ohio State players Joshua Perry and Maurice Claret about why knowing your opponent's signs matters, or maybe why it doesn't.
Did you know you are physically adapting to all your swiping, scrolling, and tapping?
We're changing our bodies and what they're able to do through our habits.
NPR's Body Electric, a special interactive series investigating how to fix the relationship between our tech and our health. Listen in the TED Radio Hour feed wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. The accusations of sign stealing against the Wolverines have sent shockwaves through the college football world. Head coach Jim Harbaugh is serving a suspension and won't be on the sidelines for the Michigan-Ohio game this Saturday. Now, sign stealing isn't new to the sport, but what impact does it actually have, and how does it affect the way the game is played? With me are former Ohio State football players Joshua Perry and Maurice Claret. Welcome to All Sides.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me as well.
Yeah, I want to start with the basics. So for those who don't know, how are plays communicated to the players in college football?
I'll start with this one. I played on defense, and we would always signal in. We rarely use wristbands. And if you use wristbands, usually there's a call on there, and they'll signal in a number that corresponds with the call. And on defense, it's way less complicated. I know Maurice can speak to the offensive terminology, but our calls were really short. We would do a front and a coverage. If there was a blitz, we would add that on there as well. And so our coach would signal for the front, they would signal for the coverage, and that was it for us.
Yeah, Maurice, actually, I remember the first time I saw one of those brightly colored guys on the sidelines, and I asked my husband essentially, like, who the word I can't say on radio is that guy. Can you tell us a little bit about those brightly colored folks?
No, it's the same thing on the offensive side of the ball, but most of the time when you deal with calls from an offensive side of the ball, the quarterback comes to the huddle and calls two or three plays in his play calling. And based on what you see on defense, you'll be able to adjust accordingly and get yourself ready to for the play. But sometimes the people on the sidelines who do have signals are for receivers who may not be able to hear the quarterback's call. So for the majority of the offense, be it the down lineman, the quarterback, and the running back, you can hear all of those people. But from a noise standpoint, when you have the people on the sideline with the brightly colored shirts or the discoloration of signs, those people are for receivers who may be across field who can't hear the quarterback, but to reassure that they're doing the right thing, they'll look at the signs.
So, Joshua, you were a linebacker for Ohio State. So I want to ask you this question. So if you knew, like 100% knew what the offensive play was going to be, would that have given you an advantage?
I think for the coaches, it certainly puts players in a position to where they could be more successful. If you know a rollout's coming, you can call a blitz right into the rollout to pull the quarterback up. If you know for sure it's a run, you can call a more advantageous run stunt, or you could call something to where you have more bodies in the box. Same thing for the pass game. If you know a pass is coming, you can manipulate coverages that way. I think a lot of it goes back to, you know, what the coaches can do to put the players in the right situation, because I know from being in those locker rooms, there's not enough time in the week to try to communicate exactly what the offense is doing to the players, but the coaches are there for like 18 hours a day. So certainly if they have an idea of something, they can get into a better situation.
So I might, I am a football fan, but I freely admit I have, I don't have near the skill to even be a football reporter, but I wanted to kind of ask you. So Marvin Harrison Jr. is a current wide receiver, and he's arguably one of the best college football players in the country right now. And so if you were playing against him and you knew it was a running play, that to me sort of intrinsically feels like an advantage.
I would say. And again, I think the bigger part of it too is, even if you know it's coming, you got to execute it. And I know there were a lot of times that we would be out there on the field and opposing offenses knew exactly what we were doing because we played the same coverage, like, you know, 70% of the time. And so there's an execution aspect of it. But yeah, if you know it's a run play and you don't have to double cover Marv, you might be able to gain an advantage. But who's to say that you make the tackle anyway?
Yeah, and that's one of the big questions that I think everybody has about this sign-stealing scandal is, you know, you can't run the 2022-2021 Michigan-Ohio games over again. You can't, you know, see how they would have gone if they didn't know. But it does, I don't know, is it fair to say that it sort of feels like they had an unfair advantage?
I'll let Maurice get the first crack at this one.
What was the question?
We were trying to say, do you feel like if you knew the signals, if, say, the allegations against Michigan are true, so I know they're still being investigated, but would you feel like the team had an unfair advantage?
I don't know. I feel like that's a loaded question, and it's two things I want to say to it.
Okay.
One, and I think Josh knows, when you go play Michigan or you go play any team, you really know everything prior to leading up because you have extensive scout team reports, right? You know a lot of signs. You know a lot of signals. You know as teams adjust what they're going to do, how they're going to do it, why they're going to do it. And you have, like, that level of detail from the people who are already in the scouting department, from the scouting reports, and you have probabilities with all this stuff. I think that the Connor Stallions guy, like, I get it. I'm from Ohio, went to Ohio State and played against Michigan and the whole gig. But to say that he has some crazy advantage that you wouldn't normally have with the scouting process that's really robust and really detailed and to what information they give you before playing, I think it's like a discredit to the people who do the job already. Do I think he was like an overzealous guy? 100%. Do I see how he could get close to the team from just being a military guy? I see that. I get that. And do I really think that he had some like super secretive information that he gave the team that gave them some sort of competitive advantage? No. I played Michigan in 2002, and I remember walking up to the line, and every single play we were about to run, they knew it. And I'm speaking from experience. I'm not speaking from like a hypothetical situation. I'm pretty sure if you ask Josh, he would say the same thing as Michigan lined up without any signs or signals. Just from a scouting report, or just from being coached real well, you kind of know what they're doing. Do I think it has more to do with everything, being with Coach Harbaugh's stance on college athletics in general, and a host of other things? Yes. And do I think it's like selective integrity from the NCAA? I can think of like 50,000 more issues that are far more important to somebody stealing signs. And it has more to do with educating kids and miseducation, what I would say, and that has more to do with the integrity of the game, integrity of schools, and integrity, and so on and so forth. So, I don't know. To me, it's a larger conversation, and this whole thing to me is being blown out of proportion. Because believe you me, Josh knows as well as I know. Anybody who's ever played, like you have the commercial response that everybody gives because that's a fan response. But then there's people who really play the game. If you talk from a player's perspective, they know there's not too much you don't know if you've went and done your detailed research on your scouting report and you listen to your coaches all week. Like, and these guys are super brilliant and smart, and they take signs already. Like, everybody does this stuff, and I'm not trying to minimize anything from Connor Stallions, but I'm also not trying to make this guy seem like he was some super detailed, overly smart guy who gave these guys a competitive advantage.
Yeah, the thing that I would say to that as well is I do think the access that he had to the play callers before the plays, it showed that they maybe valued what his importance was. I agree with Maurice in the idea that I don't want to downplay what players have to do to execute either, because I can look back to the 2022 game, and on the two long runs toward the end of the game, you have Ohio State players that are jumping in and out of gaps, and that's why Michigan's able to hit the big runs, not necessarily because they had some elite scheme, because they knew what was coming. And so I think there is a combination here of, was a guy stepping outside the boundaries of what needs to be done? Yes. Do I believe that they thought that it gave them an advantage? Yes. Do I also think that you have to go out there and execute? 100% the case. And there are plays in that game where you can say it wasn't scheme and it wasn't, they knew what was coming. Guys did not execute. And that is the thing that turns the results of the games.
So both of you went on to play after Ohio State. And I want to ask about the technology that's used in professional football. They have those. It's essentially like a communication inside the helmet. So a lot of this play calling is done electronically. What do you guys make? And I'll start with you, Joshua, about maybe bringing that to college football.
Yeah, I was a guy in the NFL who had the green dot on my helmet as well, being a linebacker. So I would call some of the defense and they radio it in. And after a certain point, the communication cuts off and then you go. There's still a layer of communication that certainly has to happen on the field for different checks and things that you see from the offense. But I think it's a very efficient way to do it. I think that it's something that needs to come to college football. I also believe that there are coaches who do not want it for various reasons. Number one is some coaches, as we talked about, their superpower is the fact that they can decode people's signals and they want to have that advantage. I think the other part is that there are offenses that are more unconventional in college where you're not calling multiple plays in the huddle and you want to go fast. And the only way you can do that is to signal everything in. And so some people think that it would give a team who maybe doesn't want to use tempo an unfair advantage. I would say that tempo is a built-in advantage anyway. And so I don't see why they shouldn't have it. Like, I think that this is something that people have wanted for a long time. We see it on other levels of football. And quite frankly, there's enough money in college football today for people to put the helmet comms in.
Maurice, what's your take on switching to sort of radio play calling, or I guess?
No, that was a great and detailed response. I think he gave perspective from both sides of the ball, the coaches, the players. I think there wouldn't be anything else I can add to that that would give value to the show.
Well, great. No. I can't let you guys go without asking the very big question. I'd love to get your predictions for Saturday's game.
It's a tough one because I think Michigan is a great football team. I also think Ohio State's built really well this year. For me, it's the lines of scrimmage. I think Ohio State's offensive line was a weakness coming in, and they've gotten better, but they're still not a great unit yet. I think Michigan's offensive line maybe has been exposed the last couple of weeks, but I think there's motivation in this one. I think that Ryan Day understands the urgency of getting the win here. And quite frankly, I think it's going to be a low-scoring affair, but I've got it somewhere in the neighborhood of 21-17 for the good guys.
Maurice?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the same thing. I give it the advantage to Ohio State because we got the running game going. And I think that will dictate a lot of what we will see on defense. I think you'll get honest coverage towards Marvin Harrison, which gives him the advantage. I think that you have to, after these last few weeks of what Trevion Henderson has done, I think that you have to be honest from a defensive perspective with putting the appropriate people in the box to try to stop it. And in having a running back going and having a solid receiving core that we have, I think that takes the pressure off the young quarterback on the road in his first game, and it all just seemed to mash up at the right time. But I also think, and Josh knows, I think that we have, I don't want to say an amazing defense, but a very, very good defense. You know what I'm saying? And I just think that these guys are motivated for Ryan Day to get a victory. And it just is what it is. Ryan Day has to get a victory against Michigan. I'm pretty sure that he's tired of hearing it because I talk enough on the internet about it. I tease him, but I love him to death. Yeah, I tease him and I troll him, but it's all in good fun and all in good spirits. I really love Ryan Day, but he knows as well as I know, as everybody knows, as Trussell knows, as Urban knows, as, you know, God rest his soul, as Earl Brooks, if he was here, you have to beat Michigan. He doesn't want to be the modern day John Cooper. And sometimes you have to say the uncomfortable stuff out loud just so they can hear it. So it makes you move in a certain way. And maybe that puts a little bit fire up under him and he wants to prove me wrong and prove everybody else wrong. But I kind of like putting people on the spot because you get a chance to put the pressure on them for them to perform. And I want him to perform and get his first victory up in Ann Arbor.
So, Joshua, there's also a bunch of Ohio State versus Michigan competitions happening off the field, too. You know, politicians, governors, they get in on those weird bets. But you wanted to talk about one involving the Boys and Girls Clubs.
Yes, we've got a fundraiser going right now, led by myself and former Michigan Wolverine tight end, All-American Mackey Award winner, Jake Butt. And we're raising funds for the Boys and Girls Clubs in Central Ohio and Southeastern Michigan. And for us, it was an opportunity to bring some goodwill to this rivalry that I think is really intensified. And I know all of us have seen the discourse on the internet, and it feels like there's a lot of mudslinging and shot taking. And I think that there are wonderful people that can impact this rivalry in a way that's bigger than sports. So 100% of the proceeds minus credit card fees are going to the families directly in need. We're not paying salaries. We're not paying marketing. We're not paying advertising. We're making sure that we can impact people. We're over 50,000 already, and we've only been running this thing for about 6 days. Michigan's currently in the lead, so we need some Buckeyes to step up for us. But it was an opportunity to directly impact our communities, and I'm glad that people have gotten on board with it.
So if there are Buckeyes listening who want to donate, how do we do that?
You can go to thegamegivesback.com, and there's a donation form that you can fill out there. You can donate anonymously as well. And if anybody wants to get in contact with us, we take in-kind donations. We take cash donations, but anything that can help the Boys and Girls Club.
Final question for both of you. Marvin Harrison Jr., is he going to win the Heisman?
I think he'll be in New York, but I'm not exactly sure he's going to win it. There's a guy in Baton Rouge right now who's playing ball like I've never seen before. But Marvin Harrison Jr. has been that impact player. He deserves a trip to New York.
Yes, yeah, same here. I got wishful thinking. I wish something amazing can happen for him to win, but for the history of it, it's been a quarterback award. But him going to New York is a victory for Brian Hartline and Ohio State program, and for us to say, hey, we've put somebody in New York, and they finished in the finals.
That was former Ohio State star running back Maurice Claret. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you all for having me.
And former Ohio State linebacker Joshua Perry, who also played on the 2014 National Championship team, who will always have a special place in my heart because I was living in Oregon at the time that that game was going on. So thank you so much, Joshua.
Oh, thanks for having me. Take care.
When we come back, we're talking about that technology and what it would take to convert college football into a Wi-Fi play calling machine. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 WOSU.
Did you know you are physically adapting to all your swiping, scrolling, and tapping?
We're changing our bodies and what they're able to do through our habits.
NPR's Body Electric, a special interactive series investigating how to fix the relationship between our tech and our health. Listen in the TED Radio Hour feed wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. Sign stealing has plagued football for decades, but high-tech solutions to the problem already exist. The NFL used radio headsets inside players' helmets to communicate, and there's another system called Go Route, which uses smart technology to send plays via devices that players wear on their wrists. Joining me right now is Go Route CEO Mike Rowley. Welcome to All Sides.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start with sort of laying a foundation of understanding for everyone. How do these helmets work? How does your technology work?
So a helmet is utilizing basically a radio set that allows coaches on the sidelines through their headphones to speak directly to a very small group of players. Maybe that's just a quarterback, or maybe that's the middle linebacker or safety on the defensive side of the ball. But it's pretty contained and pretty minimal in terms of the ability to communicate. So it requires teams who, maybe from a pace of play perspective, like Ohio State, maybe spread out a little bit more, don't huddle up as much. It's not necessarily as an efficient process for them. Where it is works a little bit more, it works better at the NFL level because they huddle. All 32 teams come together, they sit inside the hashes, they huddle up, and so that methodology and that technology works. Where our technology separates itself a little bit is in with a wearable display, the process is the same of getting information in, except instead of somebody talking over a headset, they're talking over a headset to somebody who is already signaling in from the sidelines with hand signals. That individual is now just using a tablet and touching a button and communicating with all 11 players on the field instantaneously, whether that's personnel, whether that's the play call. And by doing this, we allow really a couple of things. We allow the ability for coaches to communicate not only a play call, but in personnel and formations, but we also allow them to provide a little bit more in terms of information about the individual play. Hey, we're seeing this opportunity to stem this route, or we want you to, cut to the inside on this defensive back. It provides a little bit more context for the players. Even as the game is moving quickly, it allows them to digest information a little bit more efficiently.
So when we were talking in earlier about this potential technology and bringing it to college football, one of the questions that came up was cost. So what does it cost to sort of implement this for a team?
So on our end, the cost is pretty variable, depending on the number of devices, the software requirements, et cetera. So you're looking on the low end at the college level, $10,000 to as high as, 30, 40, 50, maybe even higher, depending on how many devices and the different implements that each individual team wants to utilize.
So how fancy you want to get.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. How fancy do you want to get? How many players do you want to speak to? We've built it this way, so it is scalable. So maybe you're an organization who isn't as big a budget. You can still get the same competitive advantage, same competitive levels and equity that a team that has a better budget to compete. We wanted to make sure that stayed consistent across the board.
And another obstacle is that some college stadiums aren't wired properly and might not have enough bandwidth to support the technology. As someone who's been to a number of Buckeye games in the SHU and has tried to like tweet or share a photo, it is like the bane of my existence. So it feels like that would definitely need an upgrade.
Yeah, for sure. And we actually have a very strong working partnership with Verizon Wireless. We're wrapping them into this this fix, and we're really trying to come up with a comprehensive solution for all 130 plus org teams across the country to solve this very specific and very complex problem. Because you're right, it's not just as simple as somebody stealing signs. There's a lot more components that are wrapped around it, from the press box to the sideline, from stadium infrastructure. And so we're trying, as an organization, we're trying to provide a holistic solution for all of college football that standardizes and streamlines those efficiencies. So you don't have to worry about getting a text out and you don't see it sitting there buffering with that blue line on your iPhone as you're waiting for that information to transfer.
Oh my gosh, that would be terrible. But so the NCAA Football Rules Committee member, Steve Shaw, was quoted in a CBS story saying that electronic communications will be top of mind in 2024. Do you see this sign stealing scandal as sort of, I don't know, the juggernaut for maybe this conversion?
Yeah, you know, it was top of mind actually back in February. So this has been a topic that's been talked about now for a while. I just think that the recent events have certainly put a greater emphasis on the pace at which this will happen. We've been very fortunate to meet with every conference. We have conversations on a rolling weekly basis with many of the leagues, and this is certainly something that's top of mind. And in all transparency, it's really something that is going to be great for college football, not only from the perspective of the student athlete, because if you got to remember, most of these athletes, many of them have never really spent much of their lives without having some type of digital device in their hand to communicate. So this is already a natural way for them to understand information. But secondly, it will ultimately, I think, provide a better user experience or visual experience for the people in the stadium or on TV, because you're not going to have to see those situations where everybody lines up and everybody stands up and looks at the sideline for 5 to 7 seconds to get another call and then try to run the, it'll keep the pace of play more fluid, more consistent. And I think from a viewing perspective as a college football fan, that's critical.
Yeah, I actually hadn't considered that, but sometimes I do try to think about that when, you know, we criticize some of the players on the field, that they're all, you know, anywhere between like 19 and 21 years old. Usually all of them were born after the year 2000 now, which is hard for me to accept.
I know.
But you're right. They've grown up as digital natives. So this is probably a lot more instinctual than it was for players 20 years ago.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think from a coaching perspective, it does simplify, right? Because right now, I mean, everybody's seen it on the sidelines. You've got a handful of coaches wearing different colored jerseys, or players or coaches wearing different colored jerseys and hats. So there's signals of who's hot, who's cold in terms of who's signaling something in. You've seen people walking around with these big sailboat sheets to try to block the coaches from when they're giving signs. You see the big cardboard cutouts with all the quadrants of four different images. You know, if you're sitting in rows 1 through 5, I'm asking for a refund because you can't see 3/4 of the game because of all these different things that are on the sideline. So another piece of this is just simply cleaning up the process and all the clutter that's on those sidelines as well, I think is another undervalued component of why this will make a bigger difference in college football.
That's Mike Rowley, the CEO of GoRoute, an on-field visual coach-to-player communications platform that is being used in the NFL and may one day be used in college football. And since you are a tech guy, I have a question for you. You know, I was thinking, we've been doing a lot of coverage on AI, particularly with the ChatGPT, OpenAI shenanigans that have unfolded over the last couple of days. And I started to wonder, Do you think there'll come a time when we see AI play calling?
Yeah, I do, actually. I really like this topic. I think the beauty of sport, whether it's baseball or football especially, is that it's so data-driven. And that's what AI needs. They need large amounts of data sets to make predictions and predictable outcomes that can translate into performance. And I think that in the next 3 to 5 years, whether at the NFL or at the college level, the teams who figure out ways to utilize AI in their off the field workflows will be better prepared to utilize those technologies when they get in on the field, whether it be tablet video analysis or play calling or statistical breakdowns for tendency reports. I think that's going to be the next big thing in college sports and professional sports, if you will, from a workflow perspective to maximize those outputs so they can make better play calls based upon more data, not just a gut instinct around them. I think you're seeing a little bit of that already happening in baseball. I think there's a lot more that can be done in the football space, and I think it's coming.
And you were actually a former Division I pitching coach, right? An associate Major League Baseball scout.
Mm-hmm. Correct. So I've seen this from a couple of different angles.
Yeah, that's really neat. I did want to ask, so there are some coaches in the college football world who have been sort of hesitant or reluctant to make the switch to the technology, in part because they think they're very good at looking across the field and legally stealing signs.
Sure.
And they don't want to lose that.
Yeah, I can, and I understand that completely. And to be frank, I think, you know, change is hard for everybody, right? When you're doing something and you've done something and you've been successful with it, trying to make an adjustment is always difficult for any individual. There is certainly an art to sign stealing when you're in the game and you're on the sidelines, or from my case, in the dugout, when you're at second base looking into the catcher. There is an art form to that. And I think that's an internal game within the game that every coaching staff plays. And that, I think from a coaching perspective, there's value in that because there's a competitive advantage. And I think that's a fun part of being a coach and being on the field, is having those back and forth with those other staffs. So I completely respect that. But I also think that the greater process of relaying information efficiently and effectively for players to execute better and more efficiently on the field, while removing the ancillary issues that we're talking about, across the country for the last couple of weeks, I think is probably ultimately more important than the ability for one staff to be really good at picking up signs across the field.
So do you think starting in the fall of 2024, we might see this, or we're looking like a little further out, 2025, 2026?
You know, our hope would be that it would be in the fall of 24. I think we'll know a lot more at the end of February. That's when the rules committee for the NCAA meets, and that's when they're going to put their votes through. Our goal over the next 60 to 75 days is to just continue to educate and talk through with conferences and coaching staffs to do our best to make sure that that's a reality. I don't really think it's a matter of if at this point, it's just a matter of when. And I think what's happened in the last handful of weeks to a month has just expedited that process and made it more top of mind. So I would be hard pressed to think that it's not going to happen for 24, but it's the NCAA and I've been wrong with them before. So we'll see.
Yeah, we heard that in the first segment. We were sort of asking what we think the ultimate penalty might be for Michigan. And, you know, both sports reporters were like, yeah, I just can't predict what they're going to do. And it's not a good idea to try.
Yeah, no doubt. It is. They operate on their own set of rules, on their own timelines, and you just kind of let them play out, and then you just deal with the fallout from the backside of it.
Yeah, I look at NIL, which is the name, image, likeness. It took years, like, to slowly work that across the country and allow players to basically make money off their image.
Yeah, 100%. And I think we've seen that that's been really valuable for players across the country, right? It's been a big step. But I also understand from the NCAA's perspective, too, that they're in charge of trying to manage and oversee the entire sport, right? And what's good for a handful of teams maybe isn't best for the entire sport as a whole. And so they don't have an easy job, and I certainly would not want it if they were asking me to be a part of it. But no, I think they take in a lot of data points, and they take into a lot of things into consideration. And at the end of the day, when they make their decision, it's everybody's going to deal with whatever it is, and we'll figure out how to move forward past February.
So we have just about a minute left, but I've asked everybody on the show this question. Who's your pick for the Michigan-Ohio State game?
I'm going to take the Buckeyes by a field goal.
I think that's a pretty solid prediction. I think everybody so far, I don't know if it's the bias of being, you know, WOSU, but we'll have to wait and see. That was Mike Rowley, CEO of GoRoute, a visual coach to player communications platform. Thanks so much, Mike.
Thank you.
And that'll do it for this hour of All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.